Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Chris. Welcome to episode 15 of NML Crossing. We are wrapping up our third week of No Man's Land coverage, which is it's more of a thrill than it should be, probably. But I'm happy that we're still at this. Today's episode might be a little bit on the shorter side. I apologize for that if you were looking forward to me rambling for longer, but I had some spontaneous dental stuff come up that I need to attend to, and sadly, I'm kind of at a time crunch right now, trying to get this in under the wire. We'll do what we can. Let's hop right into today's story here. It is Detective Comics number 721. At a May 1998 cover date, the story's called Cataclysm Part 14, Shifting Ground. Written by Chuck Dixon with pencils by Graham Nolan, I believe. This might be Graham Nolan's last issue here. I think I read that somewhere. Inks, Klaus Janson. Colors, Gloria Vasquez and Android Images. Letters, John Costanza. Edits, Vincenzo Peterson. Cover price, $1.95. Now we open with Batman and Nightwing surveying some of the damage of the very bad thing that happened at 703. And I tell you what, it's worse than I thought. Not only are the buildings, you know, toppled and just the entire skyline is messed, we've got something I never thought we'd see. We have full-on mass graves where it's like these giant piles of humanity that are being burned to prevent spreading disease. You know, looking at this, I have been, in my own time, reading Contagion, or Contagion, however you say that word, and for a split second, I thought I picked up an issue from that. It's quite a sobering scene, and it's one that, like I said, I never expected to see here. Now, Batman, he says that they're going to do whatever they can until they hear any word from Robin regarding the Quake Master. So, Robin is following up, trying to watch and rewatch the manifesto tapes and try to figure anything out. Now, speaking of our big bad, let's check in on him right now. I've complained or observed that he doesn't seem to have a model, right? Like right now, he doesn't look Kingpin-y, he doesn't look Shadow King-y, he looks more like, it's going to sound weird, but he sounds like the metallic, he looks like the metallic Green Goblin from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie. Like, ears are pointy, he's shiny, he's very angular, and his chin's pronounced. Looks way off model compared to what we've seen before. Though, I mean, I've mentioned it so many times, I'm starting to think there never actually was a base model for this character. Anyway, the QM is running some lines past Jolene Relazzo, while she mocks him for coming across sounding like some sort of cookie-cutter supervillain idiot. You know, like, I'll take over the world and all this kind of crap. Also, she mocks him a bit for lying about having anything to do with the Quake. Now, he doesn't argue, but he does ensure that she knows that, you know, her life is in his hands. He can kill her whenever he pleases. She then reminds him that while she hasn't quite outlived her usefulness just yet, he still needs her to feed him all the, you know, $100 seismo what's it words that he needs in order to sound like he knows what he's talking about. From here, we hop over to Robin, who along with Alfred is watching and rewatching that Quakemaster tape. Tim notes that there's something kind of off about QM's phrasing. Alfred, he kind of writes this off. He suggests that dude's just a ranting lunatic. But Tim doubles down. You know, they both know that the Quake Master is full of it regarding his role in the 7.6er, but there's just something about how he seems to choose his words that's getting under Tim's skin. Oh, also, Tim's kind of bummed out that he's stuck jockeying a desk while Dick and Bruce are out busting heads. Speaking of busting heads, let's head out to the lawless Gotham streets where some goons are breaking into an apartment where a drug lord was known to have kept some of his dough locked away in a safe. As they look around, they can see down to the basement below. The floor is, you know, cracked, there's a hole, and there's a family trapped down there. Oh, and the basement is filling up with water, because of course it is. Now, this family, they beg for help, and you know, one of the baddies actually looks like they're about to offer a hand when, well, zip, 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 they're pelted with mini crossbow bolts. So it's Huntress time. Helena busts in and starts cracking skulls. Just as she's about to, well, literally crack one of the baddies' skulls, she is ordered to stand down by Batman. Now, you might imagine this doesn't go over too well, but it definitely leads to an interesting conversation. Batman says he ain't gonna let Helena maim or cripple anybody, to which she corrects him. She's like, I wasn't here to cripple him, I was here to kill him. And Batman gives her the not in my city spiel, to which she rightfully points out that, well, there ain't that much of a city left. Nearby, Nightwing points out that there's a family stuck in that rapidly flooding basement. Huntress cites the family as reason enough as to why she should have been able to kill these would-be robbers. She said they would have let this poor family, you know, they would have left them to drown. Even though, I mean, just a page ago, it looked like at least one of them really wanted to help this family out. Oh well. One page later, Nightwing and Batman have saved that family and have handed them over to emergency services. Batman tells Huntress in no uncertain terms that she ought to go home. To which she's all F that, and she swoops away in order to be the real crime fighter that Gotham City needs. I wonder if we'll ever see her again. It's worth noting, it looked as though Dick was about to go after her, but Batman stopped him. Maybe that's a thread we'll tug on a little bit later. Elsewhere, the Quake Master, who now kind of looks like that old man from the old Six Flags commercials, you know, like the na-na-na-na-na-na, you know, that guy? Anyway, he's transmitting a video message to some low-rent-looking flunkies. Now, he says that the GCPD thought they pulled a fast one with the bag of newspaper they left for him, but he still wants that money, and his figure is still a hundo mil. Worth noting, he's speaking with more ellipses than I put into a given script or blog post, and if you've ever read anything I've written or listened to me speak, you'll know that that's no small feat. Lots of ellipses here. And so, we jump back to Robin, who notes all of these odd ellipsis needing pauses in QM's diatribe, and Tim keeps suggesting that there's just something about the way old Quakey speaks, and how he chooses his words almost too carefully. Next stop, GCPD HQ, where Bullock and Montoya are doing the solo interrogation gimmick on our old friends Mo and Dunk to make sure that their stories match. And well, it's kind of a good news, bad news situation because, yeah, their stories do match, but they're both so incredibly stupid that there still isn't much of anything to go on. Harv and Renee, they resign themselves to the fact that it's now time to do some actual digging. And so it's into the file room to run through the mug books and try to find any known associates of these absolute idiots. We get a quick aside here with Barbara Gordon and Mackenzie Bach, who, I guess made it back okay from what went down in Azrael 40. Makes me wonder where Sarah Essen might be. You'd figure it'd be kind of a big deal to have like a Sarah Jim reunion scene, right? I guess not. Maybe later, who knows? Anyway, Babs and Bach are relitigating the QM's rantings. Bach realizes that there's no fault line in one of the places our Big Bad said there was. And I am on record as being denser than most. There's going to be... this is all going to come together in a very convenient way that I can't follow. Like, it feels very much out of nowhere, but we'll get there. From here, we hop back to Harv and Renee, and they... well, they kind of look like I did when I decided to start this project. They're sitting on a cluttered floor surrounded by long white boxes and a lot of paper. So... very much, they might be starting a podcast, for all I know. From here, back to Robin, who finally makes some sense of the Quake Master's odd speech patterns. And again, I'm an idiot, but I really feel like I'm missing something here. Like, I feel like we're being left out of this solve, which might be the point? I don't know. Back to Bach and Babs. Hard back case, whatever his nickname is, he's trying to look through some old city maps here. He finds an old city atlas in order to confirm a hunch that he has. Now, that thing that Quakemaster referred to as a fault line. Now, this was a line running north to south from Chelsea to Victoria Park. Here he finds out that it's not a fault line. It's the old DeVille-Bremen Canal, which was filled in a long time ago. And Bach literally runs off panel to follow up on this lead? I'm lost, gang. I feel like we're being left out of this one. Back to Montoya and Bullock, who also find some damning evidence of something or another. Now, Renee shows Harvey one of the mugsheets, which is apparently a smoking gun. We don't see whose mug adorns the sheet, so I feel a little less bad about how lost I am right now. All we really need to know is that they were able to cross-reference an address of interest. I wonder if it's the same one that Bach thought of, huh? Anyway, next stop, City Hall, where Mayor Grange is. Well, you might assume she's having a day. And you'd assume right. It's not a good day to be mayor. Jim Gordon enters to try to give her an estimate for how long Gotham is going to need the National Guard presence. Just then, those same low-rent-looking baddies we saw earlier burst into the office with guns drawn. It's a stick-up, see? And they're here for that cool hundo mill. To which, Grange starts laughing, since, the doy, Gotham ain't got a buck to its name right now. Now, the bad guys, I guess we can say they take the news in stride. They figure they'll just kill the mayor instead. Meanwhile, Harvey and Renee are rushing toward some sort of, like, hangar-like building. Apparently, Bach was headed this way too, but he left before they did. Also, we see Robin is also making his approach to this hangar. Back to the streets, we see Nightwing and Batman saving some trapped Gothamites. Oracle calls in to report that her father had gone to see the mayor some hours ago and hasn't been heard from since. On top of that, I mean, naturally, there's no way to get through to City Hall to check up on him. Batman sends Nightwing to follow up on Gordon while he continues to help the civilians. He says that he's not willing to trade one life for many, even if that one life belongs to Jim Gordon, so ice cold, Bats. Then we head back to that hangar, warehouse, whatever the hell it is, for our wrap-up. Harvey and Renee decline waiting for backup, and they enter, following the sound of the Quakemaster's voice. Robin shows up just in time to tell them not to take a single step closer, because, you see, hardcore shack foot Bach is there. He's tied up, and with no less than 3 guns pressed into his dome. In the background, there's a bank of monitors with the goblin-y visage of the Quakemaster upon them. And that's where we leave it. The blurb promises that this will be concluded, even though we've still got 3 chapters. I suppose it'll eventually be concluded, so it's not technically wrong, but yeah, what are you going to do? Maybe there are a few two plates spinning in the bat offices right now. Speaking of which, next episode we're looking at Catwoman number 57, which, that's going to be an interesting one. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe interesting is not the right word for it, but we will worry about that next time. For now, let's talk about this one. And, is it just me who hates when people start sentences with, is it just me? Because, is it just me, or was this kind of hard to follow? And I mean the issue itself, I'm sure my synopsis, if you're not reading along, I'm sure I did it absolutely no favors insofar as followability. I probably mucked this up worse than anything. But this was a little, I mean, it was easy to follow, it was just, it was challenging to make sense of, or to follow organically. You know, I feel like stories like this, and we've seen stories like this in fiction and comics, on TV, just in general. Like, where you're trying to solve a mystery, kind of a whodunit. I feel like a lot of those stories ought to have a sense where those of us following along can, I don't know, solve it alongside the characters in the story. Like the old, you know, can you solve it before we do sort of challenge, you know? And unless I'm missing something completely obvious, or a lot of very completely obvious things, this didn't have any of that. Again, did it? I mean, like I said, I'm dense and stupid, but I feel like we were kind of left out of the equation here. Were we? Maybe. And I mean, seriously, there's nothing wrong with that from a storytelling perspective. Like, if this is going to be a story where the characters get information and we don't, there's nothing wrong with that. But the way this was manufactured up to this point, it kind of felt like we were supposed to be picking up on things. And again, we might have, and I just didn't, but this kind of feels like it was out of nowhere. And if you followed anything that I've done with discussing comics, you'll know that I always try to find symbolism, often where there isn't any. But I will always try to find hints and clues, and even though I'm not, you know, equipped to solve anything like that, I always try to see them, you know. And I feel like with the way this story's been crafted and, like, spun to this point, that, like, we've been kind of drip-fed these clues. But maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe come the end of Cataclysm, it'll all make sense, and I'll, like, notice things I didn't notice the first time around, or be like, oh, that should have been obvious. But as we stand now, I am not in that place. Let's talk about a little bit more in regards to what happened in the issue, rather than me going off into the weeds. We've got MacBach back here. I'm not sure I like how he's kind of just there. There was no callback to the story we looked at in Azrael 40. No mention of Bane, no mention of even Sarah Essen's whereabouts. That was his partner for that gig. And I mean, sure, we can definitely assume that she's safely back at HQ. But I don't know, I feel like maybe there should have been a scene. Or at the very least, like, a mention that, like, she's back, but her husband's not here right now. He's, you know, at the mayor's office, but, like, they just missed each other. I don't know, it just kind of feels like we forgot about her. Especially when such a big deal, well, not such a big deal, but Batman did ask the last time he met with Gordon if he'd heard anything from Sarah, and Gordon looked a bit troubled that he had not. You'd figure it'd be something. Maybe not, I don't know. Let's move on. The clash of philosophies between the Bat family and Huntress continues to be probably the high point of these early issues. The conflict of, I guess, vigilante methodologies is, it's often a ripe subject to explore and discuss regardless of context and regardless of characters. I mean, we can talk about this DC, Marvel, indie, TV, movie, you know, the conflict there that is ruthlessness the right way or is fairness the right way? What is justice? What's justice to you? What's justice to me? What's justice to them? It's ripe to discuss, right? However, with Gotham being in an almost post-apocalyptic state, I feel like it's more important and more interesting here than perhaps ever before or since. Like, we know Batman has a code, right? There are rules that he follows. There are things that he will not do. But arguments can be made that the time for such a thing might have long passed in the wake of Gotham's fall. Now, Helen has never had that issue. She's never, you know, it's very black and white with her. And in this new normal, she might have the best way forward, you know? And, you know, I mentioned this earlier during the synopsis, but notice that Batman didn't give chase, nor did he allow Nightwing to. You know, Dick was going to go after her, and Batman stopped him. So maybe part of him figures that Huntress's violent and deadly methods maybe might not be a good thing, but they might be useful. You know, and he's got kind of a plausible deniability. Like, so long as it's not him giving the orders to kill or maim, and he's not sicking her on anybody, in a way, his hands are relatively clean of responsibility. You know, Helena's actions are her own. But at the same time, I mean, let's be honest, he could have stopped her here. He could have sent Dick after her to stop her, but he didn't. So, I mean, I'm not saying that any Huntress-spilt blood is on his hands, necessarily. But at the same time, it's got to be stated that by letting her swoop away, he really didn't do much to stop that blood from being spilt, did he? Very interesting stuff, and I think some fun discussions can be had about that. One more thing, one more big takeaway here. I tell you, it was incredibly eye-opening to see that opening shot. I mean, a two-page spread of Batman and Nightwing looking at bodies being burned in a mass grave. Not expected. These are very inconvenient things to see. Necessary, but very inconvenient. And the sort of stuff I hadn't even considered occurring until I saw it. It was sobering. It really, I can't say it hit home because I can't, I don't have any experience with that sort of a thing, but it further grounded this story in reality. And, you know, I'd go as far as to say that this scene pulled me out of the story, but in a good way. I mean, I don't think a good way is the right way to put it necessarily, but I don't know. It's just this reminder that this entire Quake and after Quake and Mishigas that we've got here is bigger than good guys and bad guys. It's bigger than a dude in a bat suit. It's bigger than even the concept of good versus evil. You know, the natural disasters and things like this do not care whether you're good or evil. They just are. And seeing this in the brutal rawness of this image, not gory, thankfully, but raw, very, very raw. It's powerful, powerful stuff, and just such an inconvenient reminder of exactly what's going on the ground here. I think when we read stories featuring heroes or even just protagonists in general, we tend to lose the forest for the trees. You know, we're paying attention to what our bat family is doing or our given hero is doing. And we do get street level stuff, but this was powerful, very, very powerful. Now, overall, despite my minor density quibbles and the sort of out of nowhere resolution that we might be headed toward here, I gotta say, this was not a bad issue, not a bad chapter. And like I alluded to earlier, I feel like perhaps the Bat Office might have had a few too many plates spinning at once here as we get toward the end of Cataclysm. You know, we read that Denny essay, and I hate referring to the Denny essay over and over again, but in that essay, it didn't outright say that we were headed to just this weird upside-down time in the Batman books. It was like, okay, here's an earthquake, here's Cataclysm. It might take a few months to clean up. We didn't know it was going to be like 2 years. So I wonder just how prepared the Bat creatives were for what was to come. I wonder how many of them, editors included, even knew that we're about to enter like a year and change worth of upended Bat books. And I could be totally wrong, but I would guess that things were getting kind of batty in the Bat offices around this time. Which, unfortunately, makes it so attention to detail might not be, I don't know, quite as tight as it were earlier in the cross event. I mean, we do have this, like, weird, convenient resolution we're heading to here. We have, like, to be concluded when we got 3 issues left. And not to put the cart before the horse here, but next episode's Catwoman is very oddly placed. I don't know where it fits, but we'll worry about that next time. But it's, I don't know, it feels like it's kind of like trying to pick up spaghetti with a spoon. Overall, though, I mean, it's still good stuff. We had a lot of good stuff to talk about here, a lot of moments that will hopefully lead to, you know, more interesting discussions and more interesting scenes. I tell you, I'm pleased that we're getting toward the end of Cataclysm for sure. This has been a pretty long crossover, and I'm excited to get on to the next part here. It's just we got to get the Cataclysm behind us. Still good stuff, still excited about the project, still looking forward to more, and, you know, I hope you are as well. And whether you are or you ain't, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me several different ways. Chris is on InfiniteEarths.com, WeirdComicsHistory@gmail.com, 90s X-Men on Facebook, and Ace Comics on Twitter X. But I think that's where we will leave it for today. I'd like to thank you all so much for choosing to spend some of your day with me today. And until next time, as always, I'll talk to you again real soon. See ya. Makes it harder to think straight, starting over after it breaks. Start